When your enemies defy you, you must serve them steel and fire. When they go to their knees, however, you must help them back to their feet. Elsewise, no man will ever bend the knee to you. And any man who must say, I am the king, is no true king at all. Eris never understood that, but you will. When I've won your war for you, you will restore the king's peace and the king's justice. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinners.
Political commentary there with this quote?
You know, despite the fact that we're reusing that quote, I think within the year of the last time I used it, it felt apropos today, not only for political climate, but also we're talking all about Lannister's enemies this episode.
True.
Very true.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't even think we're going to delve into American politics past that, right?
I think that's a good plan.
We definitely should not, yeah.
Would spend the entire podcast on that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And no one would want to listen to it on either side of that aisle.
This will be your escape from American politics. I'm Tommy.
Yeah.
I'm Will.
I'm Patrick.
All right, so we're gonna go ahead, I think, and kick it straight into the third and hopefully final portion of the review of the Lannister box. Since this one is so large, we've been going ahead and reviewing them card by card. So we're gonna keep up that scheme, but we're gonna try and kick right through things here and see how it goes. So, tell you what, I'm willing to go first. Who wants to follow me up in the rotation?
Oh, can I go first? Because my favorite card in the entire box is the first card.
Oh, okay. I mean, you can go first. I like this card a lot as well. I'm excited. So, okay. Then I'll go second, and you'll go third, Tommy?
Love it.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and lay it on us, Patrick?
All right. Here we go. I'm going to read this one for you guys. Edric Storm. He's a unique two-cost Baratheon character. Non-loyal, as will be every card that we're reading tonight. He is a bastard, and he has the reaction. After the dominance phase begins, choose a character. That character does not contribute its strength to its controller's total for dominance. This phase. Ah, my god. I can't eat. Like, what more could you ask for in a Baratheon chud than this little guy right here? He's two costs.
Some
he has.
Treat, maybe?
A what?
The knight trait, maybe? That's about all I can think
of. Bear doesn't care about knights. What does Bear have that cares about knights? R'hllor would be the only trait that you could give him to make him better. They already like bastards. He's good for Gendry if you really mess up and you lose a Gendry dominance. He works with the disputed claim, that's the next card we're gonna read. And he wins you dominance. And Bear really likes winning dominance. I just played a Bear deck at Worlds. And my biggest, like, My biggest disappointment for this, for like not having more cards, was me not being able to put Edric Storm in that deck. I love this guy. And he has a power icon. I can't stop talking about him. I love him. I want to give him an A, but he doesn't deserve it. So I'm going to give him a B+. I love him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right there with you. We really kind of hem and haw over the Lannister weenies and how like solid their utility was. But Edric just slips like perfectly into what Baratheon's doing. Like, it's very rare, I think, when I'm going to draw him in a game and be disappointed in that draw. And in our meta here, Barra has really kind of seen a resurgence. So it's going to be kind of weird seeing this like Edric race, because like whoever gets him first is going to really change that dominance game.
Yeah.
And if you're knocking out your opponent's, you know, Robert at 35 strength that they've been sitting on in dominance, or heck, even if they're playing Lannister and they've got a, you know, 20 strength Tywin, that's a pretty huge little move for this two cost guy. So I really like it. And yeah, he doesn't have to like kneel for it or anything. He just does it.
Yeah, it's no longer just like who can get their Iron Throne. Now you have like a backup choice. If you can't find your Iron Throne, you can find Edric instead and start moving through that. I think he's just a one of in Baradex from now until the end of time, because he'll never rotate out.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he's really great value, and I think he also is good for melee as well, so.
He certainly can be. Like, if your opponent is looking like they're going to win dominance and they're going to, you know, you got a powerful opponent, he could help there.
Yeah, he can rein stuff in. I realized I forgot to give him a rating, so I think, he's not an NA power level, but I think he's a very solid B.
Yeah,
he's a B for me, too. Probably a one-off in most Barra decks, just like you said.
All right, Will.
All right. On to the next Baratheon card, Disputed Claim. One cost attachment, non-loyal, of course. It's a condition, and goes on a bastard, lord, or lady character only. While you have more power on your faction card than each opponent, attached character gets +2 strength and gains renown. The first thing I want to say is I just really love the little, like, Nedliness there, that it can go on a bastard, lord, or lady.
Yeah.
Like, Bastard was almost universally negative in the first edition, and I kind of like it being a little more thematic here, that, you know, they're the other person that could have a disputed claim to something, you know, as evidenced famously by the Blackfyres. But anyway, as far as the card itself goes, you know, I might try a couple copies and joust, tentatively, but I think a lot of folks are going to look at this at first and get excited and think melee or something about that renown, but you have to have more power on your faction than each opponent. So if anybody gets ahead of you, this is a waste. And so I think it's going to be really not worth it in melee. But that extra speed and strength could be worth trying for in Joust. So
extra 2 strength for Intimidate for Robert, if you could get it on him.
And it's non-unique, so you could get multiples on him.
Sure. And the other place that I saw it could be kind of fun would be to put it on Randall. So you may be behind, but then when you do take the renown, or I'm sorry, when you take the power from your challenge and you take the lead, then he stands for you.
Yeah, that's cool. I had not thought about that. I do like that.
It's a bit of an everything falling into place situation, but sure. Oh, certainly.
It's situational, but I mean, it's good nonetheless. It happens.
Well, also, I mean, even aside from that, though, if you're using this in some kind of conjunction with Tyrell, whether you're Barra Rose or Tyrell Stag, either way, I think you're the fact that kind of combination is probably the most likely to get a power lead early, which makes the disputed claim, I think, definitely more effective. So, for what it's worth. Question is, what is it worth? I still don't think it's a phenomenal card, so I think it's so conditional that I'm actually probably still only giving it maybe like a C-.
I think in a deck where you're trying to push through some of those win by fives, be it the superior claims, the put to the swords, put to the torch, whatever it is, I think having something like this where you could potentially stack more than one on the same guy and turn, you know, your 6-coster in addition to your 7-coster into tanks that are going to win them by themselves, I think that there could be value in a deck that's trying to pull those off. But I still think it's really situational and probably somewhere in the C range for me as well.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a C as well. I think that there is a Bera theme developing here of, like, shutting your opponent out of power completely. Definitely with, you know, the new King Stannis, and they've got those Kingswoods or whatever. And so this deck may come into being, and we may see this card seeing play in that deck. But it's as it is right now, it feels a little win more, so... I would probably say it's a C for me.
Cool.
All right, you're up, Tommy.
Yep. So I love this guy. Victarion Greyjoy. He is a non-loyal House Greyjoy unique. Cost 6, strength 5, military and power icons with the Captain, Ironborn, and Lord traits. He has the keywords Intimidate and Renown and the Interrupt. When Victarion Greyjoy would be killed, discard 2 power from him to save him. So, I mean, built-in saves, Intimidate on high strength, and Renown to help you rush. I mean, he's everything you want in a Greyjoy character, I would say. He's got really good traits. I mean, I don't see how he's not an auto-include.
Yep. I would agree. I think in the current environment with the current characters that Greyjoy has, like, I don't see how you could sleep on this guy. He's just so strong. Intimidate and Renown, I would say 2 of the best keywords in the game. And with stealth being up there as well, and Greyjoy has plenty of ways to give him stealth. Pike is the biggest among them. That card's almost an auto include in every Greyjoy deck as well. So, and with Valor coming back in, like, this is just more saves for Greyjoy. So he doesn't even have to be one of the ones you're stacking up with dupes or whatever. Yeah, he's amazing. I think he's. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and there's pumps floating around too, so that makes the Intimidate that much stronger. They've got the zero cost ships that can potentially pump them up. Like, there's a lot going on that can just help you take advantage of everything he's got.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think he's at least... I think he's an A- for me. I think he's in that A range. I think he is probably, you know, with a quick glance here, I think he's going to be the highest rated card tonight. I think he is just very strong, and he does exactly what Greyjoy needs. So for the foreseeable future, he goes in every Greyjoy deck.
Yeah, he was an A- for me as well.
Yeah. Until we get a deck that's like one of those, like, that until the next card we're going to talk about comes in and we have a deck that's like all Drowned God characters, this guy's going in every deck.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, some of the Greyjoy stuff works with Ironborn, so if we get any more support for that, then maybe he comes back on that basis.
I mean, I would say he's never going to leave the meta. Like, he's always going to be on the radar.
I mean, he's not like something like Balin,
right,
or whatnot, where you've got multiple versions competing. I still have an opinion on which one is best by a healthy margin.
Right.
But Victarion has no competition like that. So, like, he's just a slam dunk.
Absolutely. Yeah. What are you guys rating him?
I'm giving him an A- as well.
Tommy,
Him? I already gave him an A-, so we're all on the same page for this guy.
Cool.
Yep.
There's a lot of agreement tonight. All right.
I think you're right also that he's going to be the highest rated card tonight. He's just fits what, just everything that Greyjoy wants.
Yep. All right, the next card we have is Old Wick, which is a Greyjoy card as well. It's a 2-cost location. It has the Iron Islands trait and the reaction. After you initiate a power challenge, kneel Old Wick to put the top Drowned God character in your dead pile into play, knelt, participating as an attacker. If you win the challenge by 5 or more strength, return that character to your hand. Otherwise, place it on the bottom of your deck. Now, this card is this card is an interesting card because at the moment I don't feel like we have enough Drowned God synergy for this to be playable. We have three Drowned God characters. We have the army, we have the priest, and we have Aaron Dampere, two different versions of him. And I think the only I mean bringing any of those back into play for a power challenge could be good. You have to have seen this location, and you have to have seen them, and then you also have to win the power challenge by 5 for them to be any more than just a one-off strength pump, because then they're gone out of your dead pile either way, and you've used them. So now you have to find another Drowned God character to use it again. So I think this card's going to fall into a spot of, you know, when we build up that critical mass of Drowned God, we might start seeing more of it, and it might start coming into play a little bit more often. But at the same time, I have a feeling that the Drowned God stuff is going to have a lot to do with the dead pile, because it's kind of their thing, being dead. So you might end up not wanting them out of your dead pile, like this is doing. So I don't know where this card will end up. I'm going to give it a C for now, because I just really don't know. It really depends on what the future cards entail.
Yeah, I think so too. It's really dependent on what's coming. Interesting rules question about this, though, because we have cards in the environment like Sir Gregor and like Heads on Spikes, things like that. Mm-hmm. Say that you've got a character in play, and you also have mm-hmm. that character in the dead pile. Does that then mm-hmm. immediately make it a dupe and it stays in play?
Yes. No, that, well, yeah. It does say return that character to your hand. So yes, in fact, you would be able to put in a dupe of a unique Drowned God character and it would stay in play at the end of the phase.
I mean, yep. It's super situational, obviously, but it's just a cool little, I don't know, probably... Mm-hmm. unintended consequence of the design intent.
Yeah. Yeah. Something to watch out for, at least. Especially if Gregor, you know, remains potent and popular. But we may need more unique Drowned God characters for it to come up.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, I think this does seed Greyjoy even better for offensive Valors, right? Like, if I just don't really care about throwing my Drowned God characters away to a mass death like that, because they're still going to participate in challenges and probably then just be returned to my hand, I think that's a very big effect. So, I mean, like, looking forward to that possibility, I don't think we need many more Drowned God characters to make that at least something to be thinking about, and I feel very certain we will get them. I think just based on that kind of forward-looking power level, I probably still give Old Wick a B. I mean, man, recursion is like this, I think, can be very strong.
It can be. We'll see. We'll see how the trend goes. I think, like I said, it really depends on the effects we get. Because if the effects revolve around, like, you get things when Drowned God characters die, then this card will be really good. Because bringing them back from the dead, or come into play effects. Yeah, exactly. Either of those would be really good. But if it's more effects that key off of, like, having a certain number of them in the dead pile or things like that, then the card is less good. So it really depends on kind of how they seed that theme. And I think, you know, time will tell for this card. But you might be right. It might end up being a B.
So, did you read that one, Tommy?
Yeah, I said I got to leave it at a C until I see more.
Okay.
All right, so over to you, Will, with the next one.
All right, we get to kick it on over to Martell now with Tristane Martell. Of course, non-loyal, but he is unique. 4 cost, intrigue and power icons, and 4 strength. Lore to character and reaction. After you lose a challenge in which Tristane Martell is participating, choose a character with lower strength than his. Until the end of the phase, that character cannot be declared as a defender. I honestly really, really like this. In general, I like the 4-for-4 Bicon characters, kind of as the cost curve is in 2nd edition. The fact that he's a lord in Martell, I think, you know, the more of those we get, the more reasonable it looks to convince me that Doran is a good play. And add in to the fact that playing Doran suddenly means that Tristan can start affecting much larger characters, and I really like it. But even on his own, I think he affects enough characters to be relevant, as well as being a really solid body. Like, he's not a build around the way the location was, or just a like all around constant stalwart like we saw with Tarion. But I like him a lot. I think he's probably a B minus to start with, unless you guys convince me otherwise.
The thing that spoils him for me is that he doesn't have stealth, and he has to be participating for his effect. Like, anything that's situational where I have to have him participating, so in other words, my opponent has to choose to do a challenge that they know he can participate in, and they then therefore understand the ramifications of his effect. I mean, I just look at some of the other 4-cost characters that are out there, like Cersei, for example. The 4-cost Cersei is much better than this guy. And
well, just do keep in mind he doesn't have to lose on defense. He could lose on your own attack.
Sure. He could, and you, but are in Martell, that means that you're probably trying to throw away your power challenge, because likely you want to push through your intrigue to trigger your effects. But
depends on the deck, but yeah,
I don't know. I think this guy is definitely substandard and maybe would be a one of in decks right now. I can't really see you playing him. I'm not playing Martell unless it's bannered right now, and I doubt he finds a slot, to be honest. I'd probably give him a D+.
Wow. That's harsh.
Wow. That's a big spread between the two of us. Balance it out, Patrick.
I am gonna land pretty much right in the middle of you two guys. I think that he's a card for the Viper deck. I mean, he's a guy for that Viper deck where you're trying to blitz a massive intrigue challenge, and you, like, chump power with him or block a challenge with him and stop their biggest intrigue icon from defending your intrigue for 1,000 challenge. And for that deck, I think he's pretty solid. He is a lord, so he works well with Doran. I think, honestly, one of the biggest problems you're going to have with him is if in that deck is actually trying to lose a challenge with him on defense, because he's going to be so big. Unless they're, and like you said, they'll probably stealth him on the challenge that they really want to win. So I think he's fine. I think he will see play in that deck, but I think overall, he's really nothing to write home about. He probably doesn't see play in most other Martell decks, unless I could maybe see him seeing play in like Greyjoy's Son, if that becomes a thing. He feels very much like a Greyjoy card, stopping characters from defending. So I'm gonna give him a, I'm gonna go right in the middle, give him a C.
Okay.
Okay.
So then that's me for the second Martell card, which, speaking of that, Intrigue for 1,000 deck. So it's called You Murdered Her Children. It is a non-loyal House Martell event for cost 2. Challenge is action. Choose a Martell character you control. Until the end of the phase, double that character's strength. At the end of the phase, if that character is still in play, kill it. So I mean, I don't really have anything else to say about that, except if you're going for the mega challenge, maybe you play this card. And I mean, you probably can get better strength boosts to get you where you want to be than killing your flourish guy, but maybe. I don't know.
There's exactly one thing I like about this card. Thematic? That is that it sets up... Yes, it sets up the amazingly Nedley play when you make that huge challenge with your Viper. You play this on him to max out strength, and then you go to trigger his ability, and your opponent says, I'll treachery that.
Yeah.
So and the Lannister player bruise the Viper.
Especially if, like, their only unique Lannister character is Gregor Clegane.
Yeah.
That's the real thematic play.
Live in the dream. But yeah,
I'm exactly there with you. It's the reason why I will not play this deck, is because you are one cost event away from your entire win condition being canceled. Like, can you imagine, like, playing two of these on the Viper, getting him up to, like, 70 strength, and they play a one-cost event to just cancel all of it? Like,
yeah, and then you lose him. At that point, you're just, like, out of the game, right?
Well, you better be packing your Hand's Judgments.
Yeah, but who plays Hand's Judgment anymore? I mean,
well, if you're playing that
and
deck,
you just had to drop 4 gold to play 2 copies of this event. If they cancel it, you're out 11 gold worth of and 3 cards, and they spent 1 gold and 1 card. That's like it's such a tempo hit, it ends the game. That said, I don't hate this card long term. If that deck ever does become a thing, it's the only thing that can make that deck viable. And, like, worst case scenario, you can use it to really good effect with Ariane as well, because you can just bounce her back to hand before you'll have to kill her. So it's just, like, a super big Ariane. But it's not great.
Yeah, I would say it's actively pretty bad. I'm going to give this, geez, probably a D-.
I'm going to go with a D+, because I like the jank.
I'll split the difference and give it a D.
Yeah.
Whoo, man. Good one.
All right. Next one. We got Sweet Donald Hill. He's a 2-cost Night's Watch character. He has an intrigue icon. He is a bastard and a steward. No attachments except weapon. While Sweet Donald Hill is defending, each attacking character loses all keywords. I'm a big fan of Night's Watch. It's a little unknown fact because I haven't really played them much because they're bad and I'm too Jamie to subject myself to them. But now they're good, so I'm going to start playing them again. I really don't like this card. I'm just going to be straight up with it. I've seen people play him, and I just shake my head. Plain and simple, he doesn't stop the one keyword that you really want to stop in Night's Watch, which is stealth.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest reason why I don't like him. And second of all, his icon. Most of the characters that have the other keywords you want to stop, which are Renown and Intimidate, have military and power icons. So he's not going to do anything against those unless you put a practice blade on him. And just like... Overall, I just don't think that he's very good. And especially because in the next pack, we're getting Shadow Tower Mason, which is like the best 2-drop of all time. And you're going to be really tight on space for 2-drops, and he is not going to be the choice.
Maybe in the future Maybe in the future there's a Stewards deck or something where this guy fits in, but... What I think would have made him infinitely more interesting is if it was, while he's standing, each attacking character loses keywords.
Yeah, that would have been infinitely better.
Well, of course it would have been better.
So much more.
it would have been, he would have been a different kind of card, certainly. He wouldn't be a 2-drop chud, but right. I think that, keeping him standing is a liability. It's something that shuts off. He's a unique character that can be killed. I think that that would have been something that Night's Watch would have definitely played.
Yes, yes, of course.
I just don't see it. This guy's a D to me right now.
Absolutely. I'm going to give him a D minus. I don't think I will ever play this card. Yeah. Like I'm maybe even leaning towards an F. This is one card that I will never put in a deck because there will just always be better cards.
Yep. I mean, I think I might sometimes want one copy to round out intrigue icons for Night's Watch.
But
he's bad.
When you really think about it now, Night's Watch no longer has an intrigue icon problem. Like, they have the Steward, they have Sam, they have Dolorous Ed, who is, like, the best intrigue icon of all time.
Ed helped a lot.
Now they have Shadow Tower Mason, who is virtually at all times a tricon. They have if you're playing Old Bear and his Raven, he is an intrigue icon most of the time. A lot of them play Littlefinger. Got Maester Aemon. I think they have enough intrigue. Don't put Jon Snow in there.
That's a trap.
Yeah, that's a trap, all right. But
I still give him a D.
I'm not going to go down to an F. I'll say D minus, but I really don't like this card. I'd play a House Maester before I played this card in Night's Watch. Any day of the week. At least they have two icons.
All right. Are we ready to kick on to the next card then?
Yeah,
enough of that.
Yeah, we'll see if Night's Watch gets something better here in their location. So this is a unique for one, the North trait, and Interrupt. Oh, sorry, I didn't even give the name. Bridge of Skulls. And has the Interrupt. When the challenges phase ends, choose an opponent who did not initiate a military challenge against you this phase. That player discards one card at random from his or her hand. You know, I think overall I like this. I think this is worth one copy in some Night's Watch decks. Gives you kind of some payoff if you're able to scare your opponent out of things. And it's on the military challenge, which I think you're most likely to scare your opponent out of things. Due to the event that I'm forgetting the name of now.
Watchers on the Wall.
Thank you. I do sort of wish, though, like, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy that this, like, urges your opponent to attack, whereas most of the Night's Watch stuff with the you know, huge defensive theme rewards you for kind of scaring them out of attacking. So, like, part of me wishes that those had gone hand in hand in order to keep the game moving. Like, if this was an ability on a card, like, say, the Wall, where it gives your opponent a penalty for not attacking, but then gives you a bonus for, like, defending, then it kind of has this intersection that forces things to still happen. And you're not really required to play this as is, so I don't know. Plus, then there's the whole matter of, is this worth it in Melee, or does this just mean everyone beats on you with military and you're just not in the game?
Oh yeah, I would never play this in Melee. I think dropping this is like dropping a Varus in Melee. It's just like, you just paint yourself a huge target, and everybody's just going to obliterate you. And I like that point that it kind of creates this dichotomy, and I agree to an extent, but I actually like the fact that this card in and of itself doesn't reward you for defending the challenge, but it's kind of like the next logical step to all of those cards that encourage them to not attack you, and now this one is going to punish them for not attacking you. So I think we've almost gotten to a point against with Night's Watch where, like, if they have a duped Maester Aemon, I just stop doing military challenges. Because there's just no point. You're just throwing away characters that you can use to push through your other challenges. And you've got Watchers on the Wall to potentially worry about. And I think this card makes a really good point of, at the very least, just annoying your enemies to the point where they just make a chump military challenge and waste one of their characters. So, I like it. I think I'd give it a C+.
So I'll tell you where I really like this is a Martell Two Nights Watch deck, where not only are you going to be able to icon manipulate and prevent them from doing military challenges when you want to, but then additionally, if you want to let them do a military challenge and push it through because they don't want to lose cards, you possibly have Bastard Daughters that you kill for claim and they still lose a card. You have things like Gaston Grey that you can force them to play into if they're down to one card or something like that, for example. And then, most interestingly, you can set yourself up to drop the Vengeance for Illya on them in situations where, oh, I'm just going to chump with this one strength military guy so that I don't lose a card. But then you let it go unopposed, and then you flip that on them. And then last but not least, a deck like that can easily play a card like Game of Thrones, The Plot, and prevent them from even doing one. So I think that if you could really take advantage of this card in a deck like that, and it really kind of like the Tristan Martell you mentioned felt more like a Greyjoy card. This one feels more like a Martell card to me.
Yeah, I can see that. So I realized I didn't rate it. I probably give it a C. Did you rate it, Tommy?
I'm going to give it a C+.
Okay.
All right. Is that one Tommy? Yeah, Tommy.
Yep.
The next one.
It is. Indistark, we've got a unique character, Jane Westerling. Obviously non-loyal as the others. Three-cost character, strength 1. Intrigue and power icons with the Lady and Queen traits. With the action, Kneel Jane Westerling to choose and stand a Stark King or Lord character. So, definitely not as good as the first edition Jane Westerling, but I think playable in the right deck.
I agree. Definitely.
Oh, yes.
That's a lot of good targets right there.
I would say that this deck, this card is playable in almost all Stark decks at the moment. Like, standing fast Eddie is just nuts.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, that's an extra 2 power and another 6 strength character. Like, that's just, ugh, it's just gross. Like,
that's a trade I'm willing to make for 3 gold.
Oh, yeah. I think that the only real problem with her in my mind is that if Targ gets really popular and Blood of the Dragon is floating around, that you better make good use of her the turn you play her, because that Targ player is probably going to burn her out the next turn. So
yeah, that was the thing for me, the one strength, because I feel like that's going to continue to grow in terms of the burn, but For right now, she's efficient and she works well with what Stark wants to do. I'd probably give her B+.
Yep, I give her a B as well.
Yeah.
Unless, if you're in Europe, I'd say B-, because Targ's a lot more popular in Europe.
I'm tempted to go ahead and give her a B+. I mean, she's very nearly another copy of Seal of the Hand for those Stark decks, and man, so many good targets, so I think she's really, really good.
And in the next pack, we get the Wolf King that can make any Stark character a king to be stood with her, so.
Oh, there you go. I can make Caitlyn a king?
Oh, yes. It's just Stark character, not unique, not Lord. It's very good.
Oof.
Yeah. All right. Did we all rate that one?
Yep.
All right. So
the next one's the Last Hearth Scouts. They're a 4/4 military power bicon, Stark character, House Umber trait, and the forced reaction. After a character enters play during the challenges phase, kneel that character. So this character basically says, I hear you don't like playing against Lannister. Here, play this. I mean, that's all his character is. It's Lannister hate, and it's pretty strong Lannister hate. It completely destroys the jumper decks. Like, it basically single-handedly stops them from functioning if you play this card. Because there's no limit. It's every single character that comes into phase, that comes into play during the challenges phase, which is like half of their characters. So,
yeah.
I think it's really a meta dependent card, but in the current meta, I'd probably play one or two in a Stark deck just because Lannister is so popular.
Yeah, I think I would lean towards two with the, you know, added bonus that it dings Tyrell a little bit for what that's worth if they're doing some Queen of Thorns or her informant stuff. And also definitely dings Martell if they're planning on trying to abuse Arianne. So,
yep, Arianne and the Sand Snakes being ambushed with the Harmanuler.
Yes, good point. So, I mean, especially in the current meta, I think he's worth a couple copies. And he's got very respectable stats as well. So, like, aside from space concerns, there's not really a big drawback to running him with a huge potential upside. So...
I mean, finally, Stark has a four-cost character that's a four-cost non-unique that's not that terrible Corset army. So
yeah, I think
I think they're fine.
Illustrates further why what you can get for four-cost versus Tristan Martell. Like this is infinitely better than him as well. And if for no other reason, like say the meta is not leaning towards any jumping of any kind, you're still going to have the Hound out there. And just for him alone is good enough.
It depends on what other characters are out there. I mean, Stark does have a lot of good characters that they're going to want to run. And space is an issue. But yes, I agree. For the most part, I think he will see play pretty consistently. Yeah. And he's a very meta-dependent card. I mean, he's a card that's like jumpers come into fashion. You put them in your decks. Jumpers are out of fashion. You can take him out.
Yep.
So in the current meta, then, what is he? Probably
B- for me.
Okay.
No, he's not an A.
I was leaning towards B+ personally, but meta rating. Not overall.
So. Well, I mean, I guess the meta for me, I'm counting Valor in that mix, so all non-unique characters are kind of getting a little bit of a bump down for me, because I think Valor is going to be really popular, especially right when it comes out. So, B-, but he's solid. He'll see play.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a straight-up B, especially since it's not once per phase or anything like that, and because he's non-unique.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
Does that send it to me for Sir Barristan?
Sure does.
Sweet. I like that. Okay, so we're on to Targaryen. Sir Barristan Selmy is a unique 5-cost with military and power icons, 4 strength, and the knight trait. And the reaction after you win a challenge in which Sir Barristan Selmy is participating, if you have fewer cards in hand than the losing opponent, stand him. And I love this card. I already kind of love Targaryen stand and not having to devote other resources to Illyrio or something is definitely nice. The knight trait at least is a mild bonus, and I don't think it's too hard to kind of try to manage that so that I have a card less than my opponent in most situations. I can, you know, drop a Drakkaris or something to get my hand down if need be, and just having a very respectable body in multiple challenges is big.
Why the hell is he not Kingsguard?
Turns out suddenly on an upswing.
I think that he definitely goes in like Targ aggro decks that don't really care about their hand or just kind of dumping it out and smashing you with big military icons. He absolutely goes in there. And I think he might go in some other Targ decks, although there are some that definitely are more control-y and like to have a lot of cards in hand, so he might not necessarily fit in there, but I think he goes in a lot of Targ decks, and if he's right for your deck, he can be really strong. I mean, there's no limit on that effect, so if you keep winning challenges with him, he stays up. So
yeah, on attack or defense.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a B+. Maybe agreed. Even an A-. He's pretty close. He's right on the edge there for me. I'm going to say B+, just because if you're losing, if you're like behind, he's really not very good. Because if you can't win the challenge with him, like, he doesn't have any other effect that he's really contributing. So if you're kind of getting pummeled, he doesn't really do anything to help you come back necessarily. So I'm going to say B+, but he's very good.
Yeah, I think he's okay. I'm going to give him a straight up B. I'm frustrated that they didn't give him the Kingsguard trait. I think that's so stupid.
Yeah. And,
well, but to be fair, he wasn't part of the Kingsguard anymore at this point. He was, if anything, he would have Queensguard.
Well, that's not the art they're showing.
With anything.
That's not the art they're showing.
You're right. It isn't the art they're showing, but he's a Targ card. I think, if anything, it was a poor choice of art. But at this point, he's no, if he's a Targ card, he's no longer a member of the Kingsguard, so.
Well, wait, wasn't he Kingsguard for Rhaegar?
Well, for Aerys.
I don't think that this is a historic Barristan. I think that they've
certainly not
specifically said that they're not going to make historic cards. So I think this is supposed to be when he's sided with Daenerys.
Yeah.
So,
I
think the lack of, I agree. I think the art, I think they should have used the Arston Whitebeard art from first edition or something like that rather than this art. But yeah. I think the lack of trait is thematic and also good because that, I think that Jaime with him might have made a pretty nuts Targ deck.
Yeah, I'm thinking that that's exactly why.
Yeah,
do it. But
like giving him, making him a Tricon might have been too strong.
Impressive. Yeah,
and also
Tricon with possible renown.
Right, a Tricon with renown when he wins a challenge alone that can do 3 challenges per turn if you win them all.
Sounds good.
I mean, it could have been pretty nice. It does. I mean, it would be a fun combo. Maybe we'll get a card that can make him a Kingsguard later.
Yep.
Perfect. A taking the white attachment, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's my champ card. It's got to be, right?
Why do not? It.
Well, first I got to win Worlds. So
maybe next year.
Get to work.
All right. Over to Tommy.
So, yep, that's me for Daenerys' favor. That is a House Targaryen non-loyal attachment for cost 2. It is a condition with Targ character only. While attached character is participating in a challenge, each other participating character gets -1 strength. Not sure. Not sure how I feel about it because it's each other. So it includes your own characters.
It would get that super sell me through, though. Well,
it sure would. It would definitely help with that. I'm still not sure. I think the place for this is obviously you want to have it on. I think it'd be interesting to put it on Daenerys herself, because in the event that she has to participate, it's like her effect stays in effect.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's definitely an intended use of it.
I mean, and Miri, of course, since you want her attacking alone to trigger her ability anyway, it's never going to, you know, affect characters on your side.
Mm-hmm.
But helps her win even more consistently.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's okay. 2 gold is a pretty steep price for a condition attachment. I really don't think, like, I mean, maybe in a Miri deck you play it, probably in a burn deck, like way down the road when we actually get enough burn to make a full burn deck. But overall, I think it's just not good enough to make the cut in most Targ decks. So I think it's a D plus for me, but it's really irritating if they put it on Miri. But that's about the only really good use, in my opinion, for it.
Yeah, I think it could eventually get there, just because being able to throw that extra minus one on demand or get an unopposed challenge, I think that that has value. And down the road, like you said, as more burn cards come into the environment, I'll give this a C, hoping for future success.
Yeah, I think I'm right in the C realm. Like, I can see a handful of cards where I think it does have solid potential now, even if it's kind of expensive. But I don't think it's many cards away from actually being, you know, pretty useful. So I think C seems like a reasonable place to put it.
All right. So over to me for Allery Tyrell. She's a 4-cost, 3-strength. Character with an intrigue and a power icon. She has the traits House Hightower and Lady. She has a reaction. After Allery Tyrell enters play, search the top 10 cards of your deck for a Tyrell character with printed cost 3 or lower. Reveal it and add it to your hand. Shuffle your deck. I really like this card. This card is very good for what Tyrell wants. She's a good costed intrigue icon.
All in on Marjorie.
She has 2 icons. Marjorie, turns out, is a 3-cost Tyrell character, and she's pretty good. Allery, also a lady, which means that I think in those Knights decks, you might finally not have to run Queen of Thorns anymore, because you might actually have enough lady redundancy between Marjorie and Allery. Maybe the Stark girls, if you're playing it with Stark as well. So I'm a big fan. And then Tyrell just has a lot of good characters that cost 3 or less. So you got Marjorie, got the Arbor Knight. I mean, those are the big two. I feel like there is at least the Informant. That's the other one I'm missing. Those are all pretty solid characters that you do not mind going and finding with this lovely lady.
Well, she might increase the value of that Lady in Waiting card as well. That can become that a duplicate. Would also fit for her search, getting the auto dupe. She's also another target for that, whatever the knight is that pulls the lady when he comes into play. So.
Yep. I especially that Lady in Waiting was the other one I was forgetting about. I mean, she basically becomes an Aria in that situation without the stealth.
Without stealth, sure,
but she does still get the automatic dupe though, which is pretty good in a Valor environment. So, if you've got that one big dude with a dupe, and you want a Valor without them marching you or whatever, you can, you know, play her, go grab a dupe, dupe her up, and be sitting pretty. So,
well, more importantly than that, she can be the source of dupes for Marjorie.
That too.
I think that's the more valuable usage.
Of course. If Marjorie didn't play her,
the Marjorie.
I was saying, like, yes.
Yeah, right.
that is a very, yes.
I do that's love
it. Someone had to bring that up since Aaron wasn't here to do it.
Of course. So I really like her. I think she's a really strong card. I'm going to give her a B minus. Maybe a B. I'm going to give her a B just because I think Tyrell needed another lady really badly. So
I'm B plus on this girl. If I play Tyrell, she's definitely in at least one time.
Yep. You know what? That's fair. You're right. B plus. She goes in every single Tyrell deck that I build. So that deserves a B plus. I'm just trying not to be too Tyrell fanboy-y.
I mean, she's not exciting, but she's very good at what she does, and what she does is something that Tyrell wants, I think, one copy of at the minimum, though I think that is also going to be the majority of the time from here until forever. So I think I probably give her a very solid B. She's She's not super exciting or game changing, but very good at what she does.
Yep.
All right, kicks it over to me for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
A Rose of Gold. This is a Tyrell event for one. It is a song. And has the challenges action. Look at the top three cards of your deck, add one to your hand, and place the others on the bottom of your deck in any order. I mean, my first reaction to this is, come on. Can we not do anything else in Tyrell? This is our third event of this style already.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, you throw in two different deck searches on characters, you throw in the draw off the pleasure barge and Renly, and like there is actually a point the way the game is set up where draw doesn't equal win. Like having a better, more expansive card pool at this point might equal win, and all I'm getting is more draw and filter. Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't feel like this has a home right now, and won't have a real home until we get whatever second edition's first broken combo deck is. And then Tyrell goes, aha, I have enough cards to get you that on turn one or two.
Absolutely.
And then suddenly we have to restrict, errata, ban, whatever. I don't like it.
Especially with the lovely Taina Merriweather, who, after you play an event, choose and discard a card from your hand to draw a card with no limit. So, Tyrell Banner of the Lion will be that combo deck, or Lion Banner of the Rose will be involved with that combo deck, I am sure, because it's just, yeah.
Yep, that's so, all the card said to me was deck thinning and wait and see.
Yeah,
I don't know that's even rateable. Because it's that and that alone.
Yeah. I mean, it's... To me, this card is like... When Dark Wings, Dark Words comes back, I'll play this card.
Well, like, yeah.
This card says I get to find a better card and then draw a card. But until that comes back, I don't see you playing this card. Like, it's just...
No.
It's deck thinning, but it's only deck thinning as a challenges action, and it costs a gold, and I just really don't think it's worth it. If it were just an action, I might play it. But a challenges action... Because then they have that whole phase to potentially discard out of your hand for intrigue claim or whatever, play heads on spikes the next turn like an amateur, and discard out of your hand. That's kind of my thing. I call anyone who plays Heads on Spikes an amateur, and then I just built a deck that plays two Heads on Spikes. So.
I mean, that's how you do. If you're going to play, you might as well play both.
Oh, exactly. I'm very excited to roll out that deck, by the way. It's been one I've been working on since I got home from Worlds, and I need another couple chapter packs, but it's a good one.
Consider me intrigued. I do still like the double Heads on Spikes myself, so... Always a good start.
I'm gonna give this card a D.
Yeah,
I don't think it deserves an F, but it's a D.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I'm almost with. I guess I'll go there, but I'm kind of with what you said earlier, Tommy. Like, is this even rateable? Like, it's so meh right now, but I just know there's going to be the point where it suddenly flips that switch and is a part of something bigger that's broken.
Yep, but until then, it's a D.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. So, Tommy.
Yep. So we've got the neutrals now coming up with the unique High Septon neutral character. Costs 6, strength 5, intrigue, and power icons with the 7 trait and the interrupt. When an opponent chooses a character you control as the only target of a triggered ability, choose an eligible the 7 character you control to become the target of the triggered ability instead. Limit once per phase. He's interesting. Do we get to the point where the seven is a thing enough. Certainly he can, of course, you know, go in and use the interrupt on himself, but usually that's probably going to mean that he's going to die.
yep.
But I think that there may end up being a place for this guy, especially if there's, say that we got a Doubting Septon or something like that, where when they die, they go to the bottom of the deck. Some kind of synergies like that. I could see this guy being a piece in that, and I'm kind of interested to see what they do. Because with the seeds they've sown in this set specifically, with the Wildlings and the Seven cards, I can see that maybe there's going to be some neutral archetypes that come up. And so I'm interested and kind of want to wait and see. He could end up being potentially a B or B plus character to me. He also could just be a C.
Now, the real pro play is to redirect the kill effect onto the 7-drop Catelyn. That's the best the 7 character can target with it.
There you go.
Yeah, I think this guy is... I mean, he's seeding for future cards. I think when we get to cycle 4 or 5 or whenever the hell all the High Sparrow and all that nonsense started showing up in the books, and we get, like, a cycle full of the 7 neutral characters, this guy will probably see play in a deck, some deck that really doesn't like triggered abilities. Like, maybe a deck that's, like, a Voltron deck on Balon or something, and so you play a bunch of the 7 characters in him to protect your big dude or something like that. I don't know. I think he might see play in the future, but right now, you just... I don't think you put him in any decks until we get that cycle. So for right now, I would give him like a D plus, but assuming that they handle the 7 trait correctly and we get playable and cheap the 7 characters going forward, I give him more like a B minus.
Yeah, man, I don't know that I have really much else to add to the discussion. You guys really kind of hit all the notes, so I'm just going to be looking out for those cheap characters. I feel like we probably only need a couple non-uniques in that like 1 to 2 cost range.
Oh yeah,
to be very playable. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sure, he's not redirecting tiers of lists thanks to the fact that it doesn't target.
Still annoys me so much.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's definitely going to be enough other stuff that once we get those characters, he'll be there. So, yeah, I think putting him in the D-ish range at the moment with an eye to bumping that up in the future seems reasonable.
Nate is absolutely killing me with those poison effects. I can't. The fact they don't target, and we have so many cards that, like, make people immune to targeted abilities, I'm just like, ah! Why?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Some people would argue online that's a feature. I still say it's a bug. I think
it's
just not properly caught.
I think it is. I think it is deliberate. I think it's like an effect that's basically like they didn't want cancel to be overpowered, so they made that ability like they made tiers specifically like the kind of kill that you're never going to be able to fully protect from, except with an intrigue icon. But I don't know. Well, it's a whole nother discussion. We can move on.
Okay, that's fair. Who's up now?
I have no idea.
I read the high septon.
I think it's me. All right, cool. Devout Freerider is another neutral character. He is 3 cost, 3 strength, military power. He has an ally, mercenary, and the 7 traits. During the challenges phase, each player cannot gain gold. It's another Lannister hate card, everybody. That's about all I can say about it. I don't think this card sees play right now, even in such a Lannister heavy meta. Like, he stops basically one good card to my thinking. Are there any other really popular gain gold during challenge phase cards?
Nothing I'm thinking of at the moment other than Tyrion. I mean, there are some more that exist.
Right.
But, they're just none that are seeing play.
Yeah, like the Indoran's name exists.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean,
I haven't really been seeing people do that in challenges.
Even against Lannister, this guy gets out there. They're just racing for their milk of the poppy, and that's all.
I'm very fine if Lannister puts a milk of the poppy on this guy, to be perfectly honest. But I think more accurately, Lannister's like, okay, I'll just save my gold. Like, I'll save more of my mountains of gold. Like, they don't really need Tyrion. He's helpful. But, like, I don't know. And
that's a good point. But aren't you seeing tons of decks where they're just playing, you know, a different house and then smattering in, you know, Tyrion and Jaime, and that's it? So, I mean, in a deck like that where you're not necessarily just oozing gold. I didn't mean,
I mean,
you're straight up Tywin Lannister.
No, for sure. He is a good counter to Tyrion. But, again, I don't really know if, like, if Tyrion alone, if it's worth playing this card in your deck that doesn't really synergize with anything, is still hit by First Snow, which those Lannister decks play a lot, and is only good if they play Tyrion.
Yep.
I don't think he sees play, to be honest. Maybe when we get that 7 deck, he might be just an extra body that really gives Lannister the middle finger.
Yeah, I think it's a D right now.
I agree. That's where I'm at, too.
Yeah, though I do think it's just kind of philosophically interesting to see us get two very pointed Lannister hate cards in this
Lannister box.
Well, I mean, we didn't see that in Stark that I remember.
I think that's actually the design of the box, and that's what they said, is that the cards that are not that faction are supposed to be specifically designed to combat that faction. So I think that was very much intentional, and I think I'm trying to remember what was in the Stark box now. But I think we did see some of that. We saw Quentin Martell, who, when he dies, he kills somebody the opponent controls. So Stark is kind of wary about using their kill effects on him. And I think there were some other characters that were targeted against Stark as well.
I mean,
I'm not surprised by it.
Like seasonal stuff with Fish Whiskers, and initiative stuff with Head of the Tide, Crossroads Sellsword, I don't think. Howard Hand maybe exploits Intrigue against Stark. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think Viperize definitely does. Like, Viperize is a pretty good anti-Stark card. But yeah. I think they handled that aspect of this box better than they did with the Stark box. I do really like the anti-Lannister tech that we have here in the Lannister box. I mean, you got Barristan Selmy, who, like, once they empty your hand, Barristan Selmy turns into a nightmare. Last Hearth Scouts, like we talked about, completely shuts them down. Bridge of Skulls forces them to do military challenges even when they don't want to. Tristan Martell can trigger if they win an intrigue challenge. You know, a lot of this stuff, I think, is good Lannister counters.
Okay, on to the next. We've got Wildling Bandit. 2-cost, military and intrigue with 1 strength. Wildling trait, and while Wildling Bandit is attacking an opponent with more gold in his or her gold pool than you, it gets +2 strength. I mean, I love the thematic feel of him getting really excited about going after people with stuff he can take. It just feels like a really reasonable little wildling dude. I don't think I find room for him right now, even with Mance, but I feel like we're just maybe 1 or 2 wildling cards away from like pulling that theme into something cohesive. And I think he will fit very well into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that he definitely goes into the Wildling Mance decks, but those aren't particularly popular, and I don't think that he finds room index outside of that. Certainly not to the extent that the Rattleshirts Raiders and the Wildling Scouts have found. But I think he's a very solid Wildling. I think in those decks, like having Wildlings that are two costs, if you can play a Winterpod and make them ambush for one, that's very good. So, I think they are a pretty solid Wildling. And we also have that Wildling coming in Pack 6, I believe, where there are 2-for-1 Intrigue power icon, and while there's a Winter Plot, reduce the cost to play them by 1. So I think
with
all those Wildlings, we might start to see that Wildling deck develop here pretty soon.
Yeah, I like this guy too. Yeah. I like the icons for the cost, all of it. It seems like it's going to be a perfect fit just where you guys are saying. And I think it might even be a guy that sometimes can find its way into a Greyjoy deck here and there simply because it brings the Intrigue icon. And generally speaking, Greyjoy is going to be, not sitting on tons of gold. So if he's turned on most of the time, he could be a worthy chud for them. I'd probably give this guy a C.
Yep, C for me as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely in those Wildling decks, if you can ambush him in while he's on, a 1-for-3 is just incredible value.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think he's those decks will be very excited to see this guy.
Yep.
And also, they'll be very excited to see the next card.
Will, did you get to rate that guy?
Yeah, I did the C.
Okay, great. So, next thing is a neutral location, the Ocean Road. It is cost 0 with the Westeros trait and the limited keyword. It is marshalling action, kneel Ocean Road to reduce the cost of the next neutral or out-of-faction card. You marshal this phase by 1. I think it's good.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid, especially for banner decks. It's interesting that it's like 2/3 of a gold road, maybe in that case. But then you're kind of competing, like, because it's neutral, so now you're not getting those extra, income locations to get toward the 12 you have to have for the banner. Plus, finding room for neutrals kind of eats some of that space. So, like, I don't know. I think it's a good example of resources for second edition. Like, I can see some uses. It seems worthwhile, but it's not easy and everywhere.
Yeah, I think it's a card that you will think about playing if you're doing like a false banner deck, because then you could play that faction's in-house reducer and then this one as well to have kind of more economy that you can play and immediately use. But I think where it's really going to shine is in decks that play like those Wildling decks or the future 7 decks. Especially if you're playing them still with a banner agenda where you can have like a main house, like say Tyrell, and you only take a few cards like the Arbor and Pleasure Barge and just really good cards, or Lannister, and you just take like Tywin. And then you have a bunch of banner cards and a bunch of neutral cards, so this card is just a really efficient form of economy. So,
right, and I like that they learned from first edition where they didn't have an equivalent neutral reducer to the fiefdoms that they had for every other house, so it kind of feels like maybe they're learning from that, and it's just sowing the seeds for their ability to diversify later down the road. So, economy card, limited. Yay.
A lot of seed cards here.
Yep.
Yep, for sure. I don't know how... I'm terrible at rating economy cards. I really don't know how to do it.
According to Aaron, it's an A.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll go quite that far, but I think it's probably a pretty respectable B.
Yep.
I agree.
So it's... You will, I believe.
All right, on to...
Did you just
Patrick.
Say that one, Tom?
Yeah, I did.
All right, so we have Appointed. It's a one-cost neutral attachment. It's a title. It's a unique character only. Attached character gains an intrigue icon and the small council trait. I mean, I feel like this, I guess, goes in a deck where you want intrigue icons, you want little birds, but you don't have any or many non-unique characters that you could or would want to put them on, so you just do this because it's not a condition? Or maybe if there's some kind of small council deck that materializes, but I am skeptical that that will actually be a thing. For a while, at least.
Yeah, it's a weird card.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, definitely it's better than being a condition, but it's so close to Little Bird and the unique only thing. I don't know. There's obviously something that they're intending it for, and I'm sure that the future hope of this small council thing coming together is part of that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not it's what's kind of cool about it that I like is that if you put it on Eddard Stark, it gives him the intrigue icon that he needs and makes him the small council member that he was. So that's kind of cool, at least.
Perfect. True.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just not sure what its home is right now. It's not actively bad. It's just that at the moment it's a near exact duplicate of a card we already have.
Mm-hmm.
That has, I think, kind of seen its popularity wane since its glory days of the core set only. So this is really going to depend on what we get for the small council later on. So this is one that's probably like a man D plus or C minus at the moment.
Yep.
Yeah, something like that.
It's not great. I'll call it a C minus on the condition that FFG makes more small council related cards.
There you go.
If they don't, it's a D.
I'm still holding out hope for a small council agenda that just lets you play all the small council characters with no concern to their house.
That would definitely make this card better.
And it would be awesome. I would be in for that. That sounds like an interesting deck construction type thing. But for right now, it's some hot garbage.
Yeah. Well, we do have this next card that does something with small council, and I think that's me. We've got the council consents, one cost unique event. The small council trade itself, and then reaction after a player wins an intrigue challenge by 5 or more strength, stand each small council character.
Also, not you control.
Right.
So it does stand your opponent's characters, potentially.
Yes. So this is a fiddly one. Like, I definitely like standing my guys and getting more challenges, but maybe it's standing my opponents, but then there's this flexibility in the trigger, which I think is much more likely to pay off for you in melee than joust, where your opponent is, you know, more focused generally in their thoughts, I think, less likely to accidentally trip this for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting. I can see maybe giving this a shot in melee for a big push, and even if you stand, an opponent's character or two, like, you've probably got elsewhere that you can attack. But I'm not super enthused about it.
Yeah, you can play appointed on your opponent's characters, and then have them winning the intrigue challenges by 5 or more.
Perfect.
Like I said, hot garbage. I don't see how this is ever gonna work for me.
I agree.
The ability to stand your characters with the risk of standing your opponents, all of them. I don't know. It's just not worth it to me.
And also, of all the challenge types, I think intrigue challenges are 1x5 the least. And maybe that will change with Reigns, with people trying to push for it, but I don't know. I'm not a fan.
Yep, I'm out on this card.
Yeah, I think if we get that small council agenda, I might be, more inclined. Yeah, we'll take another look. But that would be, I think, if that ever happens, that mirror match would be the funniest thing in the world. Like,
yeah, that would be a circus.
Deciding whether or not to play this event and, like, stand the entire board again.
So, probably a D at the moment?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
It's D minus.
Rocking right at a D for me. So over to you, Tommy, skipping over Reigns, because we already talked about that one.
Puts us home stretch. We're into the plots.
Yeah. Yep. Don't forget to skip Lions of the Rock as well. Since it's a Lannister card, we already hit
it. Yep.
Ah.
Yep.
Indeed. Good call.
So we've got the neutral unexpected delay, which is a 3 income, 1 initiative, 1 claim, 6 reserve plot with a plot deck limit of 2 only, and House Frey trait. Forced reaction after the challenge phase begins. Each player chooses a character without attachment or power. Return each of those characters to its owner's hand.
How do you feel about that one?
It's interesting.
It's a card. It has text.
Its low stats make it unplayable, in my opinion.
Yeah. Plus, just like, man, what are you doing with this where you're getting a better trade out of that? Plus, it doesn't really give you the flexibility to bounce your own stuff with comes into play abilities or leaves play. Because if I choose my character so that I can get my bonus, my opponent just chooses another one of my characters, and then I'm taking the worst tempo hit.
Absolutely. But, absolutely.
I mean, maybe if you want to just play like a super dick melee deck and have everybody like gang up on somebody or something. Yeah, yeah. I'm just not seeing this coming.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very interesting melee card in that, like, if somebody's pulling ahead, you can flip it and all three of the other opponents can choose one of that player's characters.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would be pretty savage.
I suppose it could work in some sort of deck where you wanted to get your informants back in your hand.
But they're never going to put your informants back in your hand.
Yeah, and you don't want to trigger it on your own character because then
they pick another one of your own characters.
Well, sure, and that's kind of what you're looking for, right? Is if you're building around the idea that you're going to have the ability to replay them that same phase, then you don't care. Like, your opponent then is saying, oh, here, take this guy that you want to replay anyway and put it back in your hand. So, like, I think it's really situational where you'd be able to box your opponent in a corner. So, yeah, say that they pick two of your characters, right? Your only two characters are the Hound and the Queen's Assassin.
Sure.
Awesome. But, like, that's so situational that I think this is, like, we're on a roll. It's more garbage.
And I think even in that scenario, I still would rather not have both my characters go back to my hand.
Yeah.
And also now have a 3-gold plot. Like,
exactly.
I think
with
that
bad initiative to boot.
Yeah, exactly. I think the only deck that plays this card is like a Tyrell deck where all of your characters have power on them, and so you force your opponent to have to pick one of their characters. And
or
even
you just
then,
put in mass
just feels,
attachments.
Yeah, even then,
it
just
everywhere.
Feels so situational that, like, I would just not play it. It feels win more at best and bad at worst.
Possibly go from winning to losing.
Yeah.
I mean, broadly I agree, but it is funny you mentioned Tyrell, because you did make me think maybe you could work it out so that you follow a wildfire with this to set up that Tyrell scenario you mentioned, but man,
not worth it.
Yeah, no. It's I just have a hard time bringing myself to give cards flat Fs though. But this is like a D minus for me.
I'm gonna say it's a D. I think it's one that in that deck where you have a lot of positive attachments and a lot of power on your dudes, you could consider this. It is also not cannot be saved. So if you have a lot of dupes, so they can't pick anyone without power or without a dupe, then you have the same kind of effect where you're really not losing, you're losing a dupe and they're losing a character, which could be impactful, but I think the low stats just kill it.
Yeah, maybe some sort of Voltron deck down the line.
Yeah, but something like that.
It's still stupid.
Some kind of, when we get the old Red Viper back, and he's the only character
right.
you have on the table, then you can flip this plot and bounce two of their guys.
Yeah. Perfect. Or heck, even the old Beric Dondarrion, I'd take.
Oh yes, classic.
Cat of the Canals. You know some of that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, all that nonsense. All right. So now is it me?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Now we have Summoned Court. It's a 5 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim, reserve 6 plot. Edict and Kingdom gets navelled twice. Force Interrupt. When the draw phase ends, each player chooses a card in his or her hand, if able, then reveal the chosen cards. Each player who revealed a character with the lowest printed cost may put that character into play. This is a card that I would consider, I think, in a super hand destruction deck. Where if you can get your opponent down to the point where they have 0 cards in hand, and then you can reveal a 7 drop and just dump it into play, that's pretty good.
They're not going to be at 0, though, due to the timing of this. They'll have already drawn
cards.
Oh,
yeah, it's when the draw phase ends. You're right. So never mind. Yeah. This card's just... Nope. Never mind. Thank you.
Yeah.
If this could
at least combo...
I literally just read it, and then...
In the box, maybe.
Yeah,
but, like,
right.
This is the type of gambling that, like... It could work out in your favor, but like, there's no need or real reason to play this based on what else we have in the pool. There are other much less risky plots that do every like possible upside that you get out of this.
Yeah.
So I see zero reason to ever play this.
Absolutely. For some reason, just read the card and then immediately ignored the first sentence of the card. But yeah, no, I agree now. It's not even in that deck. So
D minus.
I'll say D minus as well, actually. I don't think I'll ever play this card.
It's terrible.
Yeah. I'm tempted to go further, but I'll stop at D minus on this one. I can
maybe
at least think of more situations.
Some character that has a draw phase come into play effect.
If you're playing like 3 Bear in the Maiden Fair, so you can empty your opponent's hand, then set them up to not draw a character, then dump in the 7 drop. Living the dream. But
I'm learning out of this is Tyrell can use these plots the best.
Yes, Tyrell Jank uses these plots more than anyone else.
And they still don't use it.
And they still don't use it. Alright, over to you, Will.
On to me. Littlefinger's Meddling. This is a 4 gold, 1 initiative, 1 claim, and 6 reserve plot. Kingdom and Scheme. And reduce the cost of each event you play by 2. You know, the stats are pretty blah. I know a lot of folks are excited to play this with Reigns of Castamir, and honestly, I think most of the time that is the only place where I am looking at playing it. So, you know, then maybe I'm using it, of course, not for a Tears of Lyss on that particular challenge, or at least I don't feel quite as excited about that, though it's possible. You know, I want to look at some of the more expensive 2 and 3 cost events. So, you know, I mean, it's a card to experiment with, but not one I'm just like super excited about.
Yeah,
it's not just for more money, effectively.
Reigns of Castamere for me is the spot, like you said. I could see it potentially going into some Martell decks where mm-hmm. they really want to sell some bluffing and or be able to pull off multiple event plays. And then additionally, I could potentially see a Night's Watch taking advantage of it because some of their more expensive events.
You know what I just realized? That whatever that broken Tatum Merriweather combo deck is.
Oh, yeah.
Littlefinger's Meddling is going to be their revealed plot. Yeah.
Yep. That deck loves Littlefinger's Meddling, I'm sure. I think you have to get at least 4 gold worth of events off, in my mind, to make this worth playing over a plot that just has higher gold. Yeah.
Probably. And that's tough to do consistently. Like,
I'd say you have to get minimum 2-3, because otherwise I think Time of Plenty is just a better plot, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yep.
But, like, I think Martell is where this will see the most play. I mean, Vengeance for Ilya, obviously, amazing event, 2 costs. They also like Tears, so playing those for free. That deck that plays You Murdered Her Children, I think this is the closing. This will be the closing plot for that deck. I mean, yep. Playing those for free, playing your hand's judgments to cancel your opponent's stuff for free. Those are, I think that deck will be the most prevalent place for this until we see more 2-cost events.
Now, does that work if you reduce hand's judgment, which is 0/2? I don't think that works.
If you what?
So you're saying using hand's judgment for free to cancel your opponent's events. I don't think mm-hmm. the reduce by 2 on X works for that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so if they say treachery, your Viper, your hand's judgment costs 1, and this would reduce the cost of it by 2.
Yeah.
I suppose it X is determined before you play it. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Because it's not like a pay X gold, it's X is
right,
the cost.
Right, X
so.
Is. Yeah, yeah, I forgot what the wording was, but yeah, you're right.
Yep. So I think there might end up being a Night's Watch deck that plays that Take the Black and plays this card. And then Night's Watch could also play Put to the Sword if they were playing this, because the economy is the biggest reason why that's not feasible for them. So, we'll
see.
That'd
be good value.
Might see play. It's certainly more interesting than either of the other 3 plots that have been in the landing box so far.
Agreed.
Yep.
I'll give that a C.
Oh.
I will give it a C+ for future hopefulness.
Yeah, I think I'm just gonna go flat C with the caveat, of course, that somebody might flip that broken switch on down the road.
We'll see. Hopefully not. All right. Is that one Tommy?
Back to me, I believe, for Gossip and Lies. Another neutral plot with 3 income, 8 initiative, and 1 claim. Reserve of 5. It is a scheme. Each character you control does not kneel when declared as an attacker in the first intrigue challenge you initiate during the challenge's phase. I like the initiative. I don't like the limitations on the text saying that it has to be in the challenges phase and that it has to be the first one as an attacker. Like, I don't know. I feel like you're really boxing yourself in a corner in a deck that you're probably, if you're using this, you're probably using 7 cost Cersei and you've got tons of other intrigue characters.
I don't play this plot even in that deck, honestly.
Yeah, I really don't see where I want this.
Based on the intrigue, or sorry, the initiative and maybe the ability, but I think the cost holds it back in that deck.
Yeah.
And it kills me that this is a scheme in this box that just straight up literally does not work with Rains of Castamere.
That's not unplayable. You can win the intrigue on defense and then be second player and then attack, and your characters don't need to attack.
You're going to win by 5 or more on defense? Yeah.
I suppose.
Yep. Absolutely.
That is mildly possible. But for any listeners that don't realize, if you include schemes in your Reigns of Castamere deck, which of course you are, you cannot reveal those as normal plots. They must be through the Reigns ability, which means that barring that really corner case, don't ever count on it, plan it, or consider playing this based on that. You're never going to be able to use this ability.
No, please don't. This is like the worst scheme in the world to play with the Reigns of Castamere.
Yeah, and that just kind of hurts me. I wish it had been worded either differently to work as a scheme in Reigns, or was not a scheme and was set up as a seed plot for Reigns' decks.
Like, honestly, like, this card feels like a card that used to be really good and broken in Reigns and then got nerfed to the point where it's
Form. Yep.
Like, that's what it looks like to me. It looks like a card that used to be like, maybe each character doesn't kneel during any intrigue challenge or something like that, and then they just brought it way back down to the point where it's now unplayable. I don't know. I would never play this card. It's a D minus for me.
Yep, another D minus.
Yeah. They really did not nail it on the plots in this box.
No, which is a bummer because the characters we were talking about earlier, I think overall, did very well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so over to me, we got Time of Plenty, which I think is the best plot in this box. 6 gold, 1 initiative, 1 claim, 7 reserve. Increase the number of cards each player draws in the draw phase by 1. I think this is a really good summer plot. If you're playing a summer deck, most of the time you don't really care about what your opponent's doing. Like, especially if you're in Tyrell, you're just kind of like doing your own thing. You don't really care about what they're playing or how many cards they have. So I think this is a really good plot. Drawing more cards for those decks, always good. Also, you know what? I'm just going to let the cat out of the bag. The deck that I have that plays 2 heads on spikes is a Cersei hand destruction deck that actually, it doesn't want to use any of those cards that make your opponent have 0 cards, because it wants to be continuing to discard cards from your hand. So if you have no cards, I can't win anymore. So that deck definitely plays this plot to give your opponent more cards for me to discard. It also plays the Dragon's Tail for the same effect.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And I also made somebody go up to 10 cards on a 5 reserve plot in one game the other night by playing 2 Dragon's Tail after I flipped this plot. So
that's funny.
That was pretty awesome.
That's cool.
But yeah, I really like this plot. I think it's my favorite plot in the cycle, or in the set, and I definitely will play this.
Yeah, I think it's good.
It's kind of funny you mentioned that scenario just now about making your opponent go way up on a low reserve plot. It's interesting to me that this is the first of these summer plots I've seen where I just look at it and go, you know, this is really a lot better if I'm not using the summer agenda. Like, I don't want my opponent's reserve raised.
Yeah, that's also potentially true. So I'm going to give it a B. B. I'm going to give it a B. Solid B.
I will give it a B minus.
I still don't think it's going to see wide play, giving that draw around everywhere. I do like that this is at least more interesting than the summer plots at large have been. But I think, like, if we're really looking at this objectively, not only through the lens of that Cersei deck, this is really probably only like a C+ plot.
I don't know. I have like thinking more about, you know, Dex going forward, I think this is a really good, like, income plot for Dex that either that don't have a lot of lords and ladies, so they don't want to play. Like, this is a plot that goes in Night's Watch a lot. Like, thinking about building Night's Watch decks, I definitely put this card in. Because most of the time, you really don't care about how many cards your opponent has. You're just digging for your wall or digging for whatever, building up your defenses. So I think any kind of defensive deck like that really likes this plot for both the income and the extra card draw that it gives you. So
and again, because you're not going to play Noble Cause in Martell more often than not, unless you're trying to use Viper and Doran, this this is a superior economy plot for them.
And plus, they got that Viper Eyes to keep pulling cards out of your opponent's hand anyway.
Yep.
That card is nasty. That card, by the way, also three copies in that Cersei deck. It's a Banner of the Sun.
Yeah, there you go.
I love that card.
Just more hand ripping. I love it. It's so good. That card is so good. All right, over to you, Will, for the last one.
Okay, now we've got Early Frost. This is a 3 gold, 4 initiative, 2 claim, 4 reserve, winter-traded plot. And it says reduce the number of cards each player draws in the draw phase by 1. And I think I do really like this as a winter plot and potentially a little more broad as just a 2-claim plot for other decks. It strikes me as kind of being in a similar vein to a certain first edition card that Tommy loves and I hate.
This is like one of my favorite plots they've come out with so far.
Yeah, but this is dialed back into like a stumbling block for your opponent, not a full-on like, pass it out and die headlock.
Well, except when you play two of them back-to-back.
Well, yeah, but that's taking two plays. You're both getting that reduction. Like, you're probably making the most of it with the two claim and all. But it's got low reserve. Like, I feel like it's a much healthier place. Yeah. The low gold as well, and just kind of middling initiative. I feel like it's a much healthier place for a winter plot to be than
yes.
Geez, then now I've blocked out. There we go. Fear of Winter was in first edition. So I like those quite a bit.
I think it's hard to find a winter plot that's less healthy than Fear of Winter. Or then that's
that's true.
Yeah, that's worse than Fear of Winter.
I think the Lanny Winter Jumper deck can really take advantage of this. I mean, the income is enough for them to jump in the guys with their events. And them being able to say, well, I got no guys on the board that I give a shit about, so go ahead and do your worst, because I'm going to jump in with all these guys and wipe your board. And then, guess what? You only drew one card, and I've 2-claimed your intrigue, and I'm going to do this again the next turn. Stop me.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's also, if and when a reserve choke becomes a thing, this is a very brutal card. In reserve choke, like if you can get your opponent down to like 1 or 2 reserve with the rates in your midst, and you know, if we get more reserve choke effects like that, getting your opponent down to 1 or 2 cards in hand and then flipping this so they only draw one more is really brutal.
Yep.
Also, like, super funny in a mirror match if both players flip this and just skip the draw phase. Because there is no minimum one on this. It's just you could go down to not drawing any cards during the draw phase.
Yeah, man, that does make me sort of wonder if people that want to play control in Melee may attempt mucking around with this. You know, if a couple folks sit down with it and happen to both reveal it.
Oof. Yeah.
or even... not even at the same time, but even if it gets revealed 2 or 3 times during a game, dropping everyone to 1 card a turn, I think, slows the
There was a Melee game at Worlds where there were 3 winter decks, and they were like 2 wraiths in their midst revealed turn 1, and everybody went down to 1 card or 2 cards.
Oh.
Just like, oh, and then somebody played a Varus.
Perfect.
It was pretty wild melee game.
Better be packing all your Tyrell draw cards.
Yeah. All right. So, there we go.
Yeah. Well, did we rate this? I think this is my favorite out of the plots. I think this is probably a solid like B plus plot for me. I like this a lot.
A minus for me.
I'm gonna go with the B. I don't think it's good enough to earn that A minus. Like it's good, but even reducing the number of cards they draw, sometimes like if you're crushing them, it's a chokehold to an extent. It's certainly brutal, but like if you haven't really gotten that chokehold going yet, I don't think it's really enough of an impact to be worth the 4 reserve for you, which is probably going to be 3 reserve because you're probably playing Winter. So, we'll see. I think it definitely sees play, but I don't know if it's quite an A for me.
Yeah, I think it more realistically probably is a B plus or a B, but I'm really excited about it, so I'm giving it a minus because I love it.
I understand. Totally get that.
All right. Alrighty. Is that the Lannister box?
Toast.
That's the box.
All right. It is done. There you have it, listeners. On to newer and shinier things next week. Who knows? Maybe another chapter pack. We're just going to be a review show from here on out. I don't know.
if they keep coming out with cards that fast, maybe we'll stay engaged.
Sounds good to me. Props and slops. All right. Well, I think we're going to kind of lump tourney reports and world's news and stuff here into props and stops. So before we get too far, I do want to go ahead and say we do have a new world champion to prop, Joe, with Lannister Wolf. So props to Joe for winning, slops to being more Lannister. Right?
Yep. Slaps to Lannister. Slaps to Tywin. Get out of the game, buddy. When's the restricted list coming?
Yeah. I do feel like we ought to give props to the melee winner.
Yep.
As well. Yeah. Though his name is eluding me at the moment.
Tim Sherm. Oh, it was the melee winner. Yes. Yep. And he had a really good deck. It was really interesting. I didn't get a chance to play in a game with him myself, but I watched the end of his top 16 game. He had Nightmares and Hand's Judgments in there, and they proved to be really effective to shut down his opponents and let him take the wins. So it was a really good deck. And regardless of the community's feelings about the Brotherhood Without Manners, I think Joe played some really good games. He did get lucky in some of them, but so does everybody who's at a final table. That's just how these card games work. You have to be lucky to get to the final table and to win. But he played a good game, multiple good games, in fact, and he played well. I would like to little brag about myself. I'm the only person on the day that beat him. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, props to me. I'm undefeated against the Brotherhood, so come at me, guys. 3-0 versus
Brotherhood. Yeah, I was going to ask how your particular experience went, so that sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Slops to Tagore playing a Varus like a cheeky Brit and beating me. Yeah. props to Worlds in general. Worlds was really fun. I had a ton of fun, and the prizes for the joust were really good. Like, props to the FFG OP department. I mean, they heard our complaints from Gen Con, and they really took action to fix them. And that was really awesome for me. I mean, like, I walked out of there with a lot of alt art cards and enough strength increase tokens to use them as power tokens and a really cool deck box. So I was very pleased with how that all turned out.
Awesome.
Cool. So what do you think?
That's all I got, I think.
Should we should we prop Kyle's tournament in Iowa?
Heck yeah.
That was awesome.
Iowa Worlds was a great time.
Lots of fun. We got to see a lot of people that we hadn't seen that we normally would see at Worlds, even though we didn't get to go and play this year. But Kyle and his wife put on a great little weekend, and congratulations to we had Luke in the final, who ended up losing to help me out, Will.
Schoendahl, right?
Right, yeah. Chris from California. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, we had a pretty amazing showing for a small of an event. It was, I mean, just as far as like quality of players, like we had a former Gen Con champ in Chris, a world champ in Luke, and another world champ in Matt Lay Rings. So, oh, and a championship level player.
Of course, yeah, you can't forget
the one and only.
So, so like player density wise at that event, I think like that's as high as you can get, right?
It's pretty high. It's pretty up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll say any tournament in Wausau where you have Bratz and Kid, it's pretty high density too.
That's fair.
Two world champs there as well. But yeah, you guys, that was it looked like a really fun time.
It was a blast, and I got to learn firsthand about the King of Swiss curse. So don't get excited and post about that on Facebook, folks. It will not benefit you. So yeah, gosh, what else do we have after that? On to regular props and slops.
Yeah.
Remember, we're trying to not delve into political stuff.
Yep, I know. I'm trying not to. I'm trying not to.
We could just straight up handle that with a slops to political saturation.
Yep.
And leave it there.
Sure. That's fine. That works. Props to Skyrim. I'll throw out a quick props there. The remastered edition of Skyrim just came out. I am playing it for like the 7th time. Love that game so much. Still amazing. Looks gorgeous. All about it.
Well, that's a good endorsement. Awesome. My wife and I were actually thinking about getting that as one of our first games ever. My daughter has a PlayStation 4, but neither one of us play video games, so we looked at that.
Skyrim is, I would highly recommend it. It is my favorite video game of all time.
Well, I'm sold.
I would, yeah.
Got anything, Will?
Yeah, actually, I've got one I'm pretty excited about. And that is that I have finally found an audiobook to listen to that I don't despise after the first 20 minutes or so.
Wow. That's
yeah, I haven't tried too many, but I tried like 3 in a row. And for one reason or another, either the reader or the quality of writing, they all kind of sucked. But now I've jumped into Kraken by China Mieville. Now I've finally listened to someone else that I hope to God actually knows how to pronounce it. Otherwise, why would they have let him record it and put the audiobook out? So yeah, I'm kind of digging it. It's kind of an urban fantasy thing. It's a little funny. It's not quite like Douglas Adams levels of absurdity, or certainly even at the level of like Good Omens, but I've been having fun with it. So, yeah. Check it out.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. And that's really pretty much all I've got now.
Yeah.
Cool. All
right.
Alrighty. Well, that closes another chapter of the White Buck.
That sure does.
And we did it without going into the danger zone this week. I'm proud of us.
It was good.
Good job, guys.
We'll get dangerous next time.
Tommy, now I want to get t-shirts that say "Let's get dangerous."
Absolutely.
And have some kind of White Buck Darkwing Duck like crossover.
In. I am so in for that.
Perfect.
All right, well that went pretty smoothly.
Okay.
Yeah, nice and quick.
Yeah.
Guys.
Look at that. We are under 2 hours of actual recording time.